we're scoring about 5% in our test of what's the universe made of.
The Bible describes the real world as we know it. It has the ring of truth.
What kind of country is it that we live in when you can't tell a child why his father was killed because you didn't want him to grow up hating white people?
Does the human race deserve to continue?
From the Center for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Natasha Moore. Sometimes on Life and Faith, we have conversations that are more lighthearted, that we hope make you think, but are also a bit fun, fairly upbeat. This is not one of those conversations. In this episode, we're thinking about trauma. Some of the subject matter here is, not surprisingly, a bit traumatic. A heads up in case you have kids listening or in case this might trigger something for you. It'd be easy kind of not to listen to this one, actually. And if you think that's a better option for you, please go ahead and skip this episode. But part of what we talk about here is the acute need for courage not to turn away from the trauma so many people in the world have experienced. So if you can stick with us, please do. This is also a conversation about hope and even beauty.
One of the most striking places I've been where I've seen this work is in Iraq, where people who had been held captive by ISIS, brutally tortured, raped, have gone through this and found healing. One person told me that when she was released, she was not yet free because she was still held captive by the nightmares, by the trauma. And what trauma healing does for people who had been in her situation was it begins to release the grip that ISIS has on them because they now have hope again, you know, and they feel like they're able to distance themselves from what happened and look ahead for the first time.
That's Andrew Hood. His job title is Trauma Healing Managing Director. If you Google that, he and his colleagues are close to all you get, really. It's a pretty unusual job title. He works for the American Bible Society, and they've decided that addressing the global effects of trauma is one of the most urgent needs the world is facing today. So they founded a thing called the Trauma Healing Institute. This is truly a global thing. They report that so far this work is happening in 94 countries and more than 190 languages. I also got to speak with Elizabeth Muriuki from the Bible Society in Kenya about what this looks like in her context. You'll hear from her later. But first, I wanted to know from Drew what this work is all about. One of my big questions actually was whether the Bible is really the thing that traumatized people need. Surely a good mental health professional would be, you know, a more appropriate option. He has a pretty good answer to that. But to start with, I asked him, what is the Trauma Healing Institute?
The Trauma Healing Institute is an organization that helps the church around the world address the effects of trauma through an integration of biblical and mental health principles. So that's kind of a fancy way of saying we're responding to the need for the church to be a place of hope and healing in the midst of the world's deepest pain.
So why is that needed? Why did we need an institute for it?
Unfortunately, we need that because the church isn't always good, as few of us are, with sitting with people's deep pain. Christians in general have a lot of tricks for keeping other people's pain at bay. If something tragic happens to someone, it can be very uncomfortable to hear their story of utter loss. And so we say, well, I'll pray for you, and we move on. Or we say, you should have prayed harder. Or don't worry, all things work for good for those who trust in the Lord. But we don't really help people lean in. We don't lean into the pain of others very well. And yet we have a God who is near the brokenhearted. We have a God who entered this world and went straight to where people were hurting the most.
So a lot of people would say, surely what these people need is
a good psychologist or a psychiatrist. Why do they need Christians? Why do they need the Bible?
Right. I would agree. So we're talking about people in conflict zones, refugees, victims of gang violence or domestic violence. We would not deny that they need psychological help very often. But many of them don't have access to that. And what they do have access to are their church communities. And as most of us know, church communities are often the place where people go when they have lost hope. And so what we want to do is make sure that the church, those church communities, know how to use the tools at their disposal to get people a minimum threshold of help, you know, almost to not be harmful. We have brought on an advisory council of PhD psychologists to help us speak into this material, the program model and the materials. And we have people who know the Bible, and we have people who know grief psychology, clinical psychologists who work with traumatized people, and they've come together and created this material. So our role is to train the trainer model. What we're trying to do is train the church. If you imagine a pyramid, what we're trying to do is get the base level of help. Now, as we find that people need more psychological help, where possible, we refer those people, and we have processes by which we refer those people to the next level of psychological care. But guess what? In Syria right now, there's not a lot of access to that. In many places in the most remote regions of the planet, there's not a lot of access to that. The church is what people have. And so we want to make sure that when people go to the church, they're doing no harm at the very minimum. But at the maximum, we find people transformed as they encounter a new hope that God has not abandoned them.
So to give us a better idea of what we're dealing with, what is trauma? What does that look like?
Trauma is an experience of loss that overwhelms our ability to cope. So for some, that could be the loss of a parent. For others, that could be the loss of children, family, home. It could be a violence that someone experiences themselves. But normally, humans have, in healthy circumstances, you experience something and you go through a process of coping with it, and then you kind of keep going, right? And it becomes a part of the shape of you and the history of you, but you're able to continue to function. But in some cases, the experience is so extreme that it overwhelms those abilities to cope, kind of like a physical injury that isn't healing.
And what kinds of situations then are you guys, you know, working?
One of the things that's interesting about this, I mean, I'll answer that in two ways. We're primarily, our strategic focus, if you will, is in conflict zones around the world. So that's the Middle East, mainly with refugee situation. That's in parts of Africa where there are ethnic violence and, you know, that sort of thing. And then in Central America, gang violence, South America, domestic violence, and in the U.S., the prison system. And so those are some of the most urgent areas of need around the world. But one of the things that has been so astounding to me as I've worked in this program is that I've seen Syrian refugees transformed by this, and I've seen suburban Philadelphia natives transformed by this in the U.S. So the point is, all humans hurt. All of us grieve. And it's rare for us to often have an opportunity to process that in a community setting.
So what does the Bible have to offer people who are traumatized?
The Bible isn't actually what we lead with. If you have just seen your neighborhood bombed and you're fleeing with your family and you get to a refugee camp and I come up and hand you a Bible, you have the right to be angry at me because I haven't yet sat with you. I haven't yet listened to you. I haven't created a safe place for you to tell your story. And so the first thing that we lead with is not the Bible, but a sense of safety and a sense of identification with people that it's okay. We want to hear your story. That's an example of something that is pulled from the world of grief counseling. And if you don't want to tell your story, that's fine, because what we're trying to do is actually restore for you that which your trauma has robbed you of. The voice is one of those things. So if I say, I'm willing to hear your story and you don't want to tell me, and I say, no, you need to tell me your story in order to heal, I'm taking that voice away from you again. But then reminding you that God is near the brokenhearted. So that's where scripture starts to come in, to introduce you to the God who is not, has not abandoned you, but is actually nearer to you than you might have ever known or imagined. And also to remind you through the laments in scripture that it's okay to be angry with God. That's healthy. Emotions are healthy. Negative emotions are healthy. That's part of how we process. So we talk about what is grief, what are emotions, where in the Bible do we see emotions at play? Jesus wept. You can cry. It is okay. And it's okay to yell at God and to be angry at God and to say, my God, why have you forsaken me? So we walk them through that kind of experience using scripture where they can grieve, lament, let out their pain, bring their pain to the cross. We have a moment where people can burn, write their pain down or their whatever their experience is and nail it to a cross or burn it or, you know, something like that. And then we move on to eventually, it takes a while to get to this point, but forgiveness, forgiving your oppressor, and moving into resilience over time.
So this is not a simple or a kind of cookie-cutter sort of process.
No. And, you know, to be honest, I know you will quote me on this, but I would say don't quote me on this. trauma healing is not my favorite name for this because it implies a certain equation. Do this program and you will be healed of your trauma. I often talk about it in terms of trauma care, because really these things take time. And healing, what is that? Everyone has a different understanding of what healing is. Your trauma will always be with you. The point is that it's not the end of your story. We believe it's a beginning of your story. And you carry it with you in a way throughout the rest of your life, but hopefully it can be redeemed into something, if not beautiful, at least something that is a springboard for hope.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. Trauma is a wound which is not visible, but it's everywhere in our world. As Andrew Hood says, it's very common in conflict zones, obviously, but the stats in more peaceful countries are pretty shocking too. In the US, it's estimated that 70% of adults have experienced some kind of traumatic event, and up to about 20% of those people go on to develop PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. That's more than 44 million people. 8% of Americans, more than 24 million people, have PTSD at any one time. In Australia, they reckon 10% of people will experience PTSD at some point. That's 800,000 Australians dealing with the effects of trauma at any given time. It's a lot. And the ripple effects for people and for their families can be huge. Elizabeth Muriuki is the General Secretary of the Bible Society in Kenya, which is one of the places where the trauma healing program has been rolled out and where it's having an impact.
Okay, trauma healing work in Kenya started 2 years ago. The program was introduced by American Bible Society in 2010, but actual work started 2 years ago. The actual need for trauma healing is trauma is an overwhelming need which people really don't see. It's not a physical wound that people would identify and want to help you with. It's a wound that you have from the inside because of something that you have gone through. trauma healing need is mainly because either you have gone through death of a loved one, it leaves you with a wound. It could be issues of domestic violence. It could be issues of tribal wars. We have issues with bombings because of infights, especially from Somali. Kenya is actually affected. And therefore, there are many issues that bring about issues of trauma in our country.
So where do you even start with a program like this?
For Bible Society of Kenya, what we do is we train what we call trauma healing facilitators. So we train people who we expect to go back to the community, now sit with the people who are going through the wards of trauma and take them through the process of trauma healing. It takes time. It's not something that just happens, but somebody needs to understand. We also do it on radio. We have radio programs that are learned for 13 weeks. So it's a process.
Does it work?
Yes, it works. And actually, I would say personally, I'm a beneficiary of trauma healing. When trauma healing was first introduced, I had just lost my firstborn daughter, who was 17 years old. And the pain of losing a loved one, a young kid, I now identify with the trauma healing program more because it's something I have personally gone through. And therefore, that process of understanding and what does the Bible say about things that you are going through is very helpful. So it works. I've seen people who have listened, and especially when it's running on radio, people will call and say, this is what I'm going through. We invite them sometimes to come to the office and have a one-on-one sharing with one of our facilitators, but it works. One testimony of a lady who was raped a night just before her wedding. And it was very traumatizing. She just thought of going to escort somebody at night, one of the people who had come to visit. And as she came back home, she was raped. And therefore, it was very hurting. It's the night of your wedding, and the following day, of course, everybody doesn't know what happened. You are in hospital, and everybody is wondering why the wedding is not going on. And you can imagine how traumatizing it was for this lady. When she was giving her testimony, actually 2 or 3 weeks ago, she was saying it took her a lot of time to imagine forgiving those people. Because ultimately, for you to get healing, you need to forgive. But, of course, she was sharing how she prayed, how these people should be punished by God. And therefore, it was very hard for her to bring up the issue of forgiveness for people who did that to her. But the fact that the husband-to-be actually understood, and after she went through it, they got married. They are now happily married. And she told us she actually got total healing when she woke up one day and decided, God, I want to fully forgive these people. I don't know them. I don't know where they are, but forgive them. She says that's when she actually got healing. It's not easy, and it takes time.
These stories of deep trauma and how people learn to come to terms with it, these stories of how the program is helping people trickle back even from the places of greatest despair in the world today. Here's Drew again.
So I met one person in Iraq who led these trauma healing groups among people who had been held captive by ISIS. And she told me that what she heard from them was that their bodies might be free. You know, they had been kidnapped and tortured and brutalized by ISIS for months and years in some cases. And she said that a consistent strain that she heard from them was that although their bodies were free initially, when they were back in their refugee camps or with their families, their bodies were free, but they were free in no other way. They were still held captive by their nightmares, by their trauma, by their memories, by the sense that the world is not a safe place, not a fair place, that God had abandoned them. All of these things continue to hold them captive. But going through the trauma healing program, they began to see a future, a way forward, a way out of captivity. And for them, being freed from the grip of their trauma was as important as being freed from the actual captivity of ISIS. Those stories will stay with me forever. What I heard and saw there was very powerful.
It sounds as though your job can be kind of traumatic.
Yes.
Obviously, you're kind of absorbing a lot of these different traumas that are happening to people around the world.
Yes.
How do you kind of cope with that and remain hopeful,
yeah,
if not optimistic? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they're often very tragic stories with beautiful endings, often. I mean, when I was in the Middle East, I heard stories that gave me nightmares. And that still, I saw pictures, you know, I mean, somebody showed me a picture that ISIS had texted him of what they were doing to his children. And I almost, sounds silly, but I literally almost fainted when I saw the picture. And I can't even tell you what it was because I don't want my nightmares to become your nightmares. But that caught me off guard, not having come from a mental health background myself. I didn't have my defenses up on that first trip. And so I wouldn't say now I go in defensively, but I go in a little bit more prepared. And someone gave me some really good advice when I came back after that trip. They said, as much death as you take in on a trip like that, that much life you need to take in when you come back. And so what are those things that give you life? So I wrestle with my kids and I go on walks and I ride my bike and I read and I write. Mm-hmm. And that helps. But I also need to be able to sit with their pain, you know, and I find that to be a certain kind of gift. I'm not over that. And I kind of hope I never get over it. I'm okay carrying that pain a little bit, you know, as long as it doesn't overwhelm, you know, my ability to relate to others. But identifying and sharing in the pain of the world in a way that we don't often get to do. And so if anything, it helps me be more compassionate when I see stories on the news. It helps remind me that I live in a bubble and it's up to me to be intentional about getting out of that bubble and getting to know the stories of people, even in my own community, who have a very different experience of life than I do. And so my wife and I are living very differently in terms of being intentional about no longer avoiding the situations that are so easy for people who live in bubbles to avoid.
Do you feel that that's something specifically Christian, that idea of identifying with the pain of the world?
I personally believe it finds its richest expressions in the Christian faith, but I have seen great compassion outside of the Christian world. Gandhi, my next door neighbors. and, you know, my next door neighbors told me I'm a Christian, and they said once they got to know me and my wife, they said, we've never met Christians who share our values. Care for the environment, care for the community, you know? And that made me really sad. And it's funny because normally Christians are the ones who are saying others don't have the values. But I know that they do care about those things, but I guess what gives those things meaning for me is the eternal narrative of God's interaction with a created and loved world.
From the Center for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Natasha Moore. Thanks for sticking with me through a fairly harrowing episode. I hope you also found it heartening. You can listen to more conversations like this one on our website, publicchristianity.org, or subscribe to Life and Faith on your podcast app. Just type Life and Faith in the search box to find us. If you use Apple Podcasts, do take a minute to leave us a rating or a review. Next week...
I'm not arguing for the past. The past was a foreign country, full of its own villains and full of its own terrors. I'm trying to hold up a mirror to where we are today. And of course, one footnote is that the majority of Christians in Australia today are women. Women practice Christianity at a much higher rate than blokes do, because I think they've got more sense.